tonight. We have a special guest speaker who's joining us from Canberra, the capital of Australia. We have Barry Hardwick. Hello, Barry.
Hey, Diana. How are you?
I'm well. And yourself?
Good.
Keeping well there in Canberra?
Oh, yes, my word. Thank you. Yep. No, it's a bit wet at the moment, but yeah, it's good to be here. Good to be on the show.
Yes, we had some positive feedback from your last appearance, so glad you could make the time to come back and talk to us on the fascinating topic of cause and effect you've decided to talk about. So let's start by explaining why this topic. Why have you chosen to enlighten us on cause and effect?
It's an issue that I suppose as a Gnostic we often talk about karma, we often talk about the esoteric aspects of cause and effect, and I suppose I wanted to talk about it from more an in-life experience of what does it actually mean. I work in the healthcare industry and support worker, and I see a lot of people suffer. And they don't really know why, you know, and it's clearly karmic, but yeah. So what I was hoping to be able to do, and with your assistance, is to communicate a little more in terms of the practical aspects. What does it look like, you know? Put cause and effect on the table and show me, you know, what it is. So anyhow, that's the objective, and I hope some of your listeners get something out of it, yeah, because it's a thing that interests me in my workplace as well as a Gnostic instructor. Because once we've got some sort of understanding of cause and effect, even if we don't like it, basis for some deeper understanding of deeper realities. But most people just suffer stuff without any cognizance of the. There's this cause and effect process within themselves that creating that, their karma, their things that have happened probably in previous existences, you know. So, yeah, so that's the reason why I'm wanting to speak a bit more about cause and effect.
Yeah, it can be a hard pill for people to swallow. So it's good, like most people would have heard of cause and effect, but to be able to explain it more practically and to help people to understand and to give answers and some kind of relief or remedy, which, you know, on how to deal with this phenomena.
Yeah. Interesting. I had an experience when I was 17 or 18, and I was about 19 at the time. My father died when I was 16, and I didn't cope at all well with it, you know, and I was very angry. And because he was my shining star. But when I was, you know, calling out to God internally to, you know, why this? And then this voice claim came through as clear as the bell. It says to strengthen. You know, that was the internal process. Even though at the time I wasn't very impressed with those words, they were a part, some way they influenced my coping capacities after that time, you know. So even if it's a bitter pill to swallow, it can be of assistance to people to know some of the reasons why they suffer things in their life. Yeah, that was my practical experience of that as a younger person.
Okay, so let's start at if you could describe what actually is cause and effect.
For every action, there is a reaction. So everything that's put into motion, there's a response, an effect, a reaction. So when we do an activity, it'll have consequences. Now, some of those consequences, you know, we rob a bank. There's consequences. The effect may well be that we're on the run for the rest of our life, or we're put in jail, and we suffer other aspects as well. So, you know, and if we take drugs or we drink too much alcohol, or there's effects, consequences of those actions, the consequences of our actions. Now, those ones that I've used are really, you know, basically and our conventional three-dimensional world can tell us, you know, communicate. It's fairly obvious, you know, medical science, you know, you can see livers that have been affected by alcohol, or you can see people that have been affected as a consequence of substance abuse, or people, you know, jumping into rivers in shallow waters and breaking their neck. You know, you get consequences as to actions. But the problem very much for us in this physical world is that the three-dimensional world, the physical world, the sensorial world, the world of the five senses, is the world of effect. So by and large, we live in a world and we always see consequences. And I've worked in environmental management up until I became an instructor, moved to Canberra, for 25 years. And I saw in that environmental work that after about 15 years or so of working, my area was working with people in terms of changing attitudes and stuff like that, you know, and in changing their management actions. And the reality for me in that work was, you know, 20 years into it, I was a slow learner, but 20 years into it, I realised that it wasn't anything to do with their actions. It was no point in working with their actions. You had to work with their way of thinking and their emotions, because they were what drove the things that they did, their learnt behaviours, their grandparents, their peers, a range of other things. But it wasn't that these actions spontaneously happened. They were as a consequence of other aspects within themselves. So and that is very much, you know, where and these people couldn't see that or was totally natural for them, and so it was just who they were for these thinking processes and emotional processes that created these problems for them and the environment at that point in time. And that's very much at the crux, I suppose, of cause and effect, is that it's not our actions consequence of our ways of thinking and feeling. And also there are deeper aspects which are what we would call the causal world. So we have the astral world, or the feeling emotional world, we have the mental world, and we have the causal world where there's the origin of many of these things. Yeah.
Okay. Could you then tell us a bit more about the origins of these effects that we have and that we do?
Yeah. Well, I'd like to explain a little bit more about how that works, and we can work on I'm not too sure how many of your listeners have had anything to do with or know about the tree of life from the Jewish tradition, the Kabbalah.
Yeah, we've gone through a few of the Sephiroth.
Okay.
But, it doesn't hurt to explain it in your own way, because it's quite a complex system.
Yeah. And the other example of that, because what we're talking about basically is a creation myth or a linkage between the spiritual nature and the physical nature, the physical realm. And William Blake's depiction and others have depicted Jacob's ladder from the Old Testament, where there was a ladder going from matter or from the physical world to the heavens. And on that ladder, in Blake's particular depiction of that, there were angels coming down the ladder and there were angels going up the ladder. So there were some heading down into creation and others heading up. Now, on this ladder of creation and the different Sephiroth are like realms, if you like. They're realms of creation. They're manifestations or flows of energy from the absolute abstract space, down through these different dimensions, because the Sephiroth also correspond to the different dimensions of nature and come down to Malkuth, which is the three-dimensional world. But so there's a flow of energy from the source down through these Sephiroth in the cosmic sense, in the universal sense, and they manifest. So there's a flow through these Sephiroth, and the very last tailing chale, if you like, or the last stop, is Malkuth, three-dimensional world. So coming back to what I was talking about before in relation to people's ways of thinking and feeling, the Sephiroth also correspond to our own internal world. So the, you know, I'm trying to think of his name. It's so dreadful. Hermes Trismegistus. We're a hermetic tradition, and we adhere or very much follow Hermes as above, so below, the law of correspondence. And the inner is the outer, and the outer is the inner. So the different Sephiroth, the Sephiroth that really are of concern to us are the first five, Guth, Yesod, Hod, Netzach, and Tipperith, first instance. But the other thing to realize is that Malkuth corresponds to the three dimensions, so 1, 2, 3. It corresponds to fourth dimension, Hod, the fifth dimension, Netzach, the sixth, and Tipperith, the seventh dimension. So these dimensions they're like, and all the Sephiroth are like Russian dolls, if you like. The Malkuth would be the smallest doll, and then that fits inside Yesod, and then Hod, Yesod and Malkuth fit inside Hod, so on. So these dimensions interpenetrate. So they're actually distinct, but they interpenetrate as well, which is pretty hard as a mind tax. But the real issue for us, as I was talking before about the fact of ways of feeling and thinking, is Malkuth and Yesod. Malkuth, we have the physical body, Yesod, the vital body, and Hod is the body of desire or the emotional world. We have this emotional world, our emotions inside us, and they are literally a world. They are, Master Samuel speaks about this, these different worlds are tangible. And if you've had astral experiences or dreams of that seemed like they're more colourful and they're more real than physical world, then that's true. that's the astral world. That's the body of emotion, okay? Now, the next world is the Netzach, which is of the mind. That's the thinking, intellect. Next world, Tipperith, being the seventh dimension, is the body of will. Now, the problem for us is that we've come into creation, and these bodies, and I mentioned before, they are tangible in the internal world, certainly to an awakened master they are. And these bodies are through which the energy coming through the Tree of Life and into our physical body go through. Now, if we've got a will or a causal ways of being that actually create problems, then they'll be reflected in the animal mind or a Netzach, and then reflected in a desire, and then reflected in the vital body, and then they're reflected in Malkuth, the physical body. So this flow of energy, if those bodies are, I suppose, contaminated is an appropriate word, contaminated with false ways of thinking, false ways of being, ways of desire, feeling, they will create ramifications in the physical vehicle, in the three-dimensional world. The cause and effect quite often isn't in the external world. Well, it 99.9% of the time, it's not the world that it's the problem. It's our internal processes that create the problems. And because a significant proportion of who we are is in our subconscious, in other words, we're not conscious of it, we don't know about it, then we really don't know, because we live predominantly in the sensorial world, really don't know what is creating our problems or creating pain and suffering in our life, like the clients who I work with in the work that I do. I can understand why the Christ and the Buddha and those great teachers, when they were, and I'm not saying I'm basically profoundly asleep, but I've seen enough of the suffering to realize that why those great teachers did what they did, because they had such a love for humanity and they saw the suffering and they wanted to free them from it. But that's the Gnostic teachings. That's what Gnosis is about, is freeing us from what my summer calls those four bodies of sin. Those, because what's happened is that our emotions are of an inferior nature, their desire. We are attached to external things. We're attached to material things. They give us security, comfort. And our mind wants those things. We want more credentials. We want a better house to be better people, or we want more degrees, or we want more houses or more money, or we want all, desire all these things external to ourselves and think that we have to have them to be happy. Mm-hmm. And as a consequence, we become out of kilter with that natural flow of energy down through the tree of life. And through our own tree of life, our internal cosmos must cause it. Mm. Our internal cosmos is in disorder. Another master in Gnosis, Raphael Arape, explains it beautifully when he said the ego is like a knot or a restriction in the natural flow of energy down through the tree of life. And it's a perfect description. It's so profound and beautiful. And that's exactly what happens in our psychology. So now we venture into more different territory now, because it's within ourselves. The problem, every problem in our life is predominantly associated with our own psychology. So you could say that all our problems are of our own making. That can be a bitter pill to take. And because we're always looking for somebody outside ourselves to say, well, it's, you did that. You pressed my buttons. You caused these problems for me.
Yes, because it seems to be easier that way.
It does.
Okay, some very interesting stuff there, Barry. We'll just go to a short music break and then we'll be back. So, Barry, you were mentioning before the music break that we essentially are the creators of our own misery in life. So could you explain this idea a bit more?
Well, the other thing about this misery, because, I've spoken in the first section about the practicality of us being in life now and our ways of thinking and acting, thinking and feeling and acting are the problems, creating problems in our life now. But the other issue for us to comprehend is that our ways of thinking and feeling aren't just from this one existence, that we potentially have lived many existences where these incorrect ways of thinking and feeling have been created. So that's why most of our of who we are is in our subconscious, is because much of it was, we were born into this life in that circumstance, with that misery, if you like. Pre-programmed. Masamel says, this misery follows us from one existence to another. We live the same dramas, comedies and tragedies over and over again, exactly like Groundhog Day, until eventually one would hope that we transcend those frailties. And so that's the Gnostic word, be able to work through and dissolve those knots in the natural flow of energy down through the tree of life. One of the key starting points for that process is self-observation. We need to become more conscious of our ways of thinking and feeling and start asking for assistance in telling, because this is a whole internal process. This is the revolution of the consciousness we're talking about. It's awakening those parts of ourselves that have been in slumber and are those knots in or those restrictions in the natural flow of energy into this vehicle. They create the problems. But the thing for us as well, we've got to observe our ways of thinking and feeling, and meditation is really good for that. Meditation gives us the space to enable us to start to perceive the mind, to start to see the emotions and the turmoil. The other key aspect in this observation process would be, the next step would be to become able to create some degree of separation. So we're perceiving, we're looking at something within ourselves, the mind, and we're observing that, but we're not actually the mind, we're something else. And we're observing our emotions, but we're not actually the emotions. That observer is the consciousness. Then we've created enough space for the consciousness to start working, that awakening process to start. The other key aspect of starting to break the bonds of karma, if you like, those dramas, comedies and tragedies that we've lived in previous existences, is to accept we have an inner divinity. Now, our inner divinity is any awakening process. You know, many of the pseudo-esoteric, pseudo-occultist stuff will talk about, you know, how you've got the power within yourself, da-da-da-da-da-da-da, but it's all separate from a divinity. It's separate. It's like you are a god and you have the power to do this. Now, from a Gnostic perspective, that's nonsense, and it's just going to create deeper pain and suffering. Now, one of the keys to this, in acceptance of our own divinity, we start, because one of the key causes for our problems is we have separated from divinity. We have severed our links with our inner divinity. And that is a key causal aspect of problems for us. You know, that if we, you know, for those who are familiar with Lemuria and the fall of humanity into disrepute and into sin and stuff, into a severing of that relationship with divinity. Now, that's a critical aspect in terms of this process of internal awakening, and also to recover some of that, because that severing of our bond and our link to our inner divinity is actually an act of ill will. There's a lot of ill will in that. You know, like I'm pride and arrogance that we can do it without our divinity. So unless we can, you know, part of this is, yes, there needs to be an awakening, but it actually has to be an awakening in cooperation with our internal divinity. Otherwise, it'll just be another form of slavery, another form of bondage, because our inner divinity provides us that religare, that binding together or relinking, which is the origin of the word religion, is critical to this process of freeing ourselves from karma. You know, that's what caused the karma and the separation from our own inner divinity. You know, we were proud and arrogant. Our inferior emotions took over and we separated ourselves. So that's an important aspect. The other really important one that Master Samael speaks about in the scriptures by the Christ was we need to create something new to hold this new information. And Jesus spoke about new wine, putting new wine into an old hardened leather flask, because the old container would burst. Therefore, one needs a new pliable container for storing a new wine. So the new wine is new ways of thinking and feeling. So trying to fit them into the existing paradigm just won't work. Another example was to tear a new suit to mend an old one, you know, to rip up a new suit to get patches for an old suit. It just doesn't work. So to bring those two beautiful stories and the meaning behind them into a practical context of what we need now, we need a new storage container. Storage container is the mind. We have to do is to abandon those ways of thinking and feeling that created the problems, because they perpetuate the problems too. They can keep the problems going, you know, and deepening into the mire, if you like, becoming more and more ingrained. So now to do that, one of the key things is we need to develop a capacity to sacrifice those things, to give them up. Now, a key, simple and silly, but a key example is we often blame people around us, and they speak dreadfully to me, or, you know, they press my buttons, da-da-da-da, those sort of things, driving, rage, all of those sort of things. One of the key aspects of this change is to see that when we allow people to press our buttons and we become angry, we envy, resentment, pride, all of these lower emotions actually give energy to other people, give them force, they give them power over you. So what we have to do is to work, as the Christ suggested, is to deny those expression of those egos. And in doing so, we keep force within ourselves and we take responsibility for our own actions. Because the deeper reality is that the only thing we've got control over is our response to external stimuli. We can't control the external world. And if we think we can, we're deluded, because it'll never work. It won't work. You'll end up, a tyrant or totally miserable, because it just doesn't work. That's from an esoteric point of view. We are the cause, as we said before, we're the cause of our own karma. We are 100% responsible for what happens in our life. And what we have to do, if we want to, you know, awaken consciousness and we feel this pressure of unhappiness or whatever, we have to take responsibility for our own reactions. And in taking responsibility, we free ourselves, which is really bizarre. But that's that, you know, that's the internal. So it's about, you know, receiving the unkind actions of our fellow man with humility and love and understanding, without malice. And he says, you know, it's like kissing the whip beats you, which is probably a bit strong, but you know, all of these things are a trial process, are a starting process. Like that separation is a start of that process, being able to perceive what is that not flow or the ego or something that is of a detrimental, being able to observe that body in the three-dimensional world is the first step. It's an incremental thing of gradually building the consciousness's strength to be able to perceive how the ego is acting in the vehicle. And eventually, if you continue observing and separating, being separate from that ego, it will lose power. It's like a science. You don't give it energy, you don't give it your force, it'll die, because it relies on the essence, on your inner psychology in supporting it, identifying with that ego, becoming that ego of anger, becoming that ego of hatred, becoming that ego of pride. Yeah, so if you can work on your own psychology, your inner cosmos, psyche, you know, psyche, Greek, soul. Your psyche is your soul. So.
Okay, just in the last few minutes before we go into the practice, how does karma and dharma relate to cause and effect? Because they're terms that, you know, most people were familiar with.
Very definitely, Thank you. Good question. karma is a Sanskrit word. It means the law of action and consequence, or cause and effect. So when we receive karma, and many people see karma as, you know, it's bad, you know, you're suffering. Karma is an intelligent, you know, it's a cosmic principle. And karma in reality is like Groundhog Day. We keep being given these opportunities to learn and to educate the essence, that soul, that inner nature. We miss the opportunity, you know, we haven't done it in a previous existence, and we're given those opportunities over and over again to be able to transcend that karma or learn the lesson. So that's what karma is. It can be a mechanical process, because the people that I observe that suffer consequences in this existence are suffering it in a mechanical way, because they're not conscious of going on. They haven't had experience, or some of them may have, but they haven't been able to work in a way to develop the psyche or develop the consciousness to be able to perceive the deeper realities of what's happening and why it's happening. So karma is the medicine, basically. It's medicine for that divine nature, that divine spark within us. It's medicine for the consciousness, the mechanical or the sleep nature, you know, the subconscious. Until we start awakening consciousness, we can't really perceive or have some degree of awakening. We can't perceive those inner realities. So, but when we start that separation, that self-observation and separation process, then we start to develop the consciousness to start growing and start perceiving some of those inner realities. Okay. And the other thing is about karma, if you do become conscious of suffering karma, try not to protest. Try not to protest, because you get more karma. You know, it's that's the way it is. I shouldn't laugh, but that's the internal reality. Now, dharma. Dharma is the law that upholds. Dharma in Sanskrit means that without which nothing can stand, or that which maintains the stability and harmony of the universe. So it's actually the natural flow of energy through the tree of life. So that's dharma is, and from a point of view us in matter, because you can see dharma is the natural flow of energy through the tree of life. So it's those unrestricted flow of energy down through the tree of life. But because we've got the bodies of sin, and we have become fascinated by matter, we don't respond, and we don't have a vibration that's in operation or concordance with those energies of those realms. So we suffer karma. That's how we suffer karma, when you know, that the natural flow of dharma down through the tree of life is stopped. But also Master Samael talks beautifully about that dharma is that because we're in matter and we're trapped by matter, and we're trying to break free of matter to regain or to realize to religare, to rebind together with our inner divinity. And to do that, we have to break free, and we have to change our internal nature. So in our physical body, in our vital body, in our astral body, in our mental body, and our causal body, we have to reclaim that which we've lost. So we've got millions of egos, lots and lots of egos that actually create restrictions in that flow of energy. So we have to reclaim what is lost, and we do that through paying karma, learning the lessons that we haven't learned, or another way of looking at it, as Master Samael put it beautifully, is we need to be able to earn some dharma. And we need to earn cosmic capital, which dharma is from the point of view when you're trying to break free of creation or to create these bodies of fire that are compatible with the natural flow of energy down through the tree of life, then we need some cosmic capital. And Master Samael speaks about that. And lots of people in those have had experiences of these bags of money appearing in dreams, and that's cosmic capital. And it may be in this existence or it may be in others when we've earned that cosmic capital. So, yeah, that's dharma. Dharma is that natural flow of energy, but it also has a value, especially when we're trying to break free of creation, the wheel of samsara. We need cosmic capital.
Excellent.
Is there anything else you wanted me to cover on that one?
Well, there's always the how to accrue dharma, but perhaps for another time we'll just have another short break.